This is Radio Boston. I'm Evan Horowitz. President Trump is currently meeting with Republican and Democratic congressional leaders, including Nancy Pelosi and Mitch McConnell, to discuss border security and the prospect of ending the partial government shutdown. Earlier today, Trump continued to push his argument that America needs a wall along its southern border.
We have ICE and we have Border Patrol. They're going to make a plea for the wall. They need the wall. They can't do it without the wall.
This is all happening as the Democrats are preparing to officially claim control of the House of Representatives. And among the leaders of that new congressional majority is Catherine Clark, the representative from Massachusetts's 5th District. Starting tomorrow, she'll serve as vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus, making her the 6th highest ranking member. We spoke earlier this hour, beginning with why she's feeling hopeful about Trump's meeting with congressional leaders.
I'm hopeful that the Trump shutdown can come to an end and that the president will agree to pass the legislation that we are going to take up in the House tomorrow that has already passed the Senate and give us until February 8th to really come to a full compromise. So we will see. It is always interesting negotiating with the president, but I am hopeful that he sees that the shutdown is it's dangerous and it's unfair to the federal workers affected.
So that's the plan you're pushing ahead with. It's spending bills that have already passed the Senate, temporary spending for Homeland Security, and just kick the can a little bit and hopefully make this issue a little easier to deal with in a couple of weeks.
That's right. You know, it will give us some room around Homeland Security, but we'll make sure that the federal workers, the almost 800,000 people that have been affected by the shutdown. And I can tell you that coming through Logan Airport today on my way back to D.C., the TSA agent was from my hometown of Melrose, and he asked me very sincerely to please get his paycheck back to him and how unfair it was. And I take that very seriously, and I'm glad it's going to be the first order of business tomorrow when we are sworn in the majority. And I hope that the president understands that border security is important to everyone in this country and that he cannot hold it for his wall, and that we need to get back to truly negotiating about how we improve national security and protect our federal workers and do what's fair by them.
But the wall does seem to be the real sticking point, at least for the president. He wants $5.7 billion in additional funding to continue construction of a barrier of some kind along the southern border. Do you see an opportunity either this week or, you know, in a couple of months for a compromise on this issue? Maybe he does get the funding for a wall in exchange for the reinstitution of DACA, the Obama-era Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals for people who were brought to the U.S. illegally as children.
Yeah, I think that we are open to compromise, just as you said, but not around a large wall that has never been a realistic plan for improving border security. But we can talk to the president about many things that can improve security on the southern border. Recently, a congressional group traveled to New Mexico and reported that the border patrol there did not even have cell service, which is something they need. We can use technology. We can use, as we currently do, some fencing and other types of barriers. I think the only non-starter in all of this is his idea from political rhetoric when he was campaigning that Mexico would build a large wall spanning our entire southern border. We built large walls in medieval times because that was the best technology we had. Today, I can tell you that federal researchers have told me they're far more concerned about tunneling than building walls.
The way you phrase it is the wall is kind of old tech. Nobody talks about E-Verify anymore, but there was this push years ago to say, you know, what we need is an electronic border. That is, the reason people are coming to the United States is because there's work. And the reason there's work is because businesses have been getting away with hiring people who are not citizens or not here legally. But we could have an electronic system to monitor business hiring, and that would effectively limit the ability of people coming illegally to get jobs. Why has that sort of fallen off the radar?
Well, I think that this president has become obsessed with this one idea that he has, and that is building a large cement wall. You keep seeing pictures of these prototypes being built, but it's never been realistic. And we have to look at many of the root causes of migration, what is going on in the Honduras and Guatemala and other countries where these migrants and refugees are coming from. How can we be helpful with humanitarian aid? How can we support what is happening in their home countries so that the need to become refugees is diminished? But we're always going to have immigrants, and we have to look at our system and how we can best make sure that the system is one that is fair and that promotes legal immigration.
And presumably it's not just immigration policy or the border that interests you. I mean, we can now let's move to some broader issues. Like, you're about to serve. This is your first opportunity to serve in a Democratic majority, right?
Right.
Yeah. And you've taken a leadership role as vice chair of the House Democratic Caucus. So what are you most excited about now that you control you and the Democrats control the House?
Oh, well, I am so excited to put the experiences and the challenges of American families back on the table in Washington. And we saw it throughout the midterms that what people really want to see is that their voices, the things they talk about around their kitchen tables, are represented again and talked about here in Congress. And we're going to start by the first bill we're going to do is going to be aimed at getting corruption out of politics, protecting that fundamental right to vote, making sure we get dark money out of our political campaigns, and put the voice of Americans ahead of special interests.
So, I mean, that's already quite a list of legislative ideas. Lots of them will die before they reach the Senate. This is not necessarily a critique, right? You have a vision, you want to pursue it. Do you feel a sort of mix of optimism and pessimism knowing that control of the House is only one branch of government?
Yeah, we're very aware that the House is the only Democratic majority, and the White House is also Republican. But I think that it is about making that case for the American people that our crumbling infrastructure needs our attention, making health care more affordable, protecting those with pre-existing conditions. So I am very hopeful that when we can actually pass bills through the House, whether it's reforming our gun laws, addressing climate change, that if the Senate or the President rejects those, that's going to be something the American people are going to have to make a decision on in 2 years in 2020. But I think there is plenty of room in a bold agenda that is driven by the needs and opportunities of the American people to find bipartisan support.
There are also powers the House has. So, I mean, in addition to kind of legislative maneuvering, there are powers that the House has that don't rely on cooperation with other branches, including investigative powers. How big a role do you see, or how do you balance a legislative agenda against investigating President Trump and other sort of issues of malfeasance that you see across government or more broadly?
Yeah, well, I think that we can do both things. We can absolutely move forward on a bold agenda and hold this administration accountable. Over the last 2 years, we've seen the Republicans really fail to govern and fail to provide oversight. So we are going to be looking at some of the issues that the Republicans just refused to. But I see that as part and parcel of putting together a bold agenda that, you know, really puts the American people first. And I think that we will do both.
So I'm also very concretely interested in the question of President Trump's tax returns. I mean, my understanding is that the House has the unilateral authority to read his tax returns into the public record. Is that right? And are you going to do that?
That is correct. And my understanding from Chairman Richie Neal of Massachusetts, who is the incoming chairman of Ways and Means, is that he will be making a request for the president's tax returns. And we will see what the response will be from the administration when he does that.
Does the administration get to make a response? That is it a request or is it a legal right? Do you have a sense?
Well, I think that there is some concern that the president will bring a lawsuit to try and block the chairman of Ways and Means and that committee from getting those tax. But we will have to see what sort of objection, if any, they put up to turning over those tax returns.
So getting back to sort of the Democratic control and the new majority, you've supported the presumptive House Speaker, Nancy Pelosi, very publicly since the debate over her speakership began. You've also played a big role helping new Democrats get elected and mentoring them in D.C. You've won some accolades for this. And I wonder if you can keep doing both, hew to the old guard, be a friend to the new guard. Do you feel pulled apart?
Absolutely not. I think that Nancy Pelosi is going to be the type of speaker that we need for these times. She's strategic. She knows the House and Congress so well. She is a tough-minded negotiator, but she's also fair. And I think the changes that she and Jim McGovern are proposing that are really going to strengthen our committees again is also going to help with bipartisanship and be able to get Congress functioning as it should. And I am so excited and energized by the new members that we have coming in, many of whom I've worked with over the past 2 years throughout their campaigns. So I am very optimistic about what the House is going to be able to accomplish and couldn't be more excited about what the Democratic caucus looks like and having Nancy Pelosi as speaker.
Well, could I give like a concrete example of where there might be a tension here? I mean, take the Green New Deal, right? A number of incoming congresspeople, among them Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, have been calling for a major policy push to invest in clean energy and pair that with a way to create jobs. You know, so create jobs and combat global warming through a Green New Deal. That's the promise. You haven't signed on yet, as I understand it. Neither has the speaker. Isn't that a kind of tension already?
I actually have.
Oh, you have signed on yet. Well, I apologize for mischaracterizing that.
That's okay. And you know, the speaker is supporting the select committee that will be looking at climate change and what a Green New Deal would look like. So I think that, you know, that is a great example of where, you know, the more established senior members of the caucus are working with our new members who are, you know, using their voices and why they got elected to bring shine a spotlight on these issues. And climate change is one of them. So I actually see that as an issue where we are going to be able to work together and where you see a synergy between our new members and our leadership team.
All right, last question, and you had to know it was coming. On Monday, Senator Elizabeth Warren took a step towards running for president, this little gradual dance where you set up a committee and you don't quite announce. But she did set up an exploratory committee in moving towards a formal run for president. Will you be supporting her?
So we are going to let her process play out. But I can tell you this, that I think the message that Elizabeth Warren has been championing her entire professional life, and certainly as a U.S. Senator from Massachusetts, is one of economic opportunity and making sure that things work as well on Main Street as they do on Wall Street. And I am encouraged and supportive of bringing that discussion and perspective into the presidential race as well.
That's Congresswoman Catherine Clark. She represents Massachusetts' 5th District. Representative Clark, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Thank you, Evan. Happy New Year.
Stay with us. Coming up, we discuss the new legislative session here on Beacon Hill. I'm Evan Horowitz. This is Radio Boston.